program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with Dr. James Lehman, a dentist who has been practicing dentistry for 30 years. Dr. Lehman earned his dental degree from Marquette University in 1982. He opened a practice in Kenosha that same year, and later in Libertyville in 1998. Dr. Lehman invented, patented, and produced a unique toothbrush, the only one of its kind in the world. Plus, he discovered and coined the term sprained tooth syndrome. And Dr. Lehman, thanks so much for being here. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. And I tell you what, there's so much to talk about. And before we discuss your toothbrush, sprained tooth syndrome, mercury fillings I want to get into, and, of course, the pressures involved in the job, let's back up a bit. My gosh, you come from a generation of dentists. When did you know you wanted to be a dentist?
I remember the exact moment. My mom's side of the family is from a small town in Wisconsin, and her side of the family is where the dental gene was fostered.
I thought you were going to say dental hygiene. That's right.
Just the dental gene.
Yeah, right.
When we would go up to visit, I would find myself hanging around my uncle and my grandfather's dental office. Matter of fact, my grandfather graduated back in 1918, and there's seven of us that are dentists from that side of the family.
That was wild. That was just something. I mean, it's really neat.
And my daughter has carried on the tradition. She just joined me in practice last year. We all graduated from Marquette in Milwaukee, and so... At any rate, the moment that I realized that I wanted to be a dentist, I was sitting in my uncle's office, and I was getting my teeth cleaned, and he was whistling a merry tune and talking with, I think, a neighbor that had stopped by the office and said, "Hey, Doc, you want to go fishing after work?" And I thought to myself, this is a pretty nice way to live and pretty nice way to work. I couldn't see myself pushing papers and answering phones and being in the corporate structure. So at that very moment, I decided to be a dentist. And what was really odd, I was in high school at the time, and I went back to high school and talked to my counselor about changing my classes to get ready for pre-dent. And for some reason, my computer-generated class schedule was changed, and it was the perfect schedule. Somehow the schedule had changed. It was almost like it was predestined. And so I took that as a sign that I was doing the right thing.
Well, it sure sounds like it. And now your daughter's involved in your practice as well. And that's just got to be very gratifying.
If anyone out there has any family business and they can work with their family, it's really a joy getting up every day and knowing that you have the support and love of another family member in your business, and it actually makes it more worthwhile to go to work.
And probably kind of fun, and your off hours, do you talk shop, or can you get away from it a little bit?
We do, and actually, I'm seen as kind of a smart guy now.
It's the old Mark Twain thing. The older I got, my father became more intelligent, yeah. That's neat.
Absolutely. So yeah, and she lends a lot of energy to the office. Being a young female, she attracts a lot of young families themselves, and new technology. She pushed me into getting the digital X-rays, and I was going to do it, but it took her to make me see the light, and so I have the experience, and she has the new technologies, and it makes kind of a good team.
Yeah, let's talk about these advancements. And now I know you've come up with something that we teased in the intro, sprained tooth syndrome. What is that?
Well, every day we have patients coming in the office, and they have different types of problems, and some are mild problems, some of them are severe problems. And so we do tests, and we try to diagnose with X-rays and with bite tests articulating paper and hot and cold tests, and try to find out what is causing their problem. Well, I noticed that there was a classification of toothaches or pains that didn't quite fit the normal, and so I started to pay attention to those cases and started to figure out that it was a mere case of a tooth that had shifted. Our teeth shift our entire lives for many different reasons. And these shifting teeth, if they shift in a good place, then your bite is fine and everything works well. But if it shifts into a bad spot, then all of a sudden you're going to be pounding on it. And if you do that constantly all day long, it's going to be sore. It's going to be like a sprained ankle, only it's a sprained tooth. And many dentists have sensed this and know about this from the standpoint of being able to treat these cases conservatively, and that is to adjust the teeth and see how it feels. But I went a little step further.
Oh, so by adjust, what does that mean exactly?
You take a drill, and your enamel is about 2 to 3 millimeters thick in most places. So you might be taking off a tenth or two-tenths of a millimeter of enamel. Mm-hmm. To take it down so that it's not so high.
Okay. Kind of like a bone spur, you'd kind of be taking
invasive. It's not painful at all.
Okay.
You don't have to numb a person up. It's in the enamel, which is very painless.
So then would you, like with a sprained ankle, you ice your ankle. Would you then ice this sprained tooth too?
Well, inflammation is the enemy of pain. And so, yes, the tooth is quite inflamed from the pounding. So what you do is you would stay off of it like you would a sprained ankle, and you would possibly take an anti-inflammatory if it was painful enough, and then give it some time.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few days, you'll notice a difference, and it'll be feeling better. Actually, when you adjust a tooth that's sprained, it feels better immediately. They'll say, oh, my bite is more comfortable.
Interesting. So mm-hmm. instead of doing something invasive like pulling it, we can just use more conservative approaches like you said.
Exactly. Yes. And you have to be careful, though, because if a person is starting to get a dental infection, it'll mimic the signs of sprained tooth syndrome. That's why you have to completely test what's going on. So I don't want people at home taking a file to their teeth.
No, we don't need any self-dentist. Yeah. Now, you also came up with a toothbrush. I thought that was sort of interesting. I was reading on the website. How do you go about inventing a toothbrush?
Well, I was in the shower one day. No, it was one of those aha moments where you think about what a toothbrush does. It gets in between the teeth, and it removes plaque and food particles. And
Can I say one thing? When I go to Walgreens or wherever, and Costco or whatever, there are so many toothbrushes there. So what makes yours unique then?
Well, I was getting to that.
Okay.
The background of the toothbrush industry before the 1980s, the toothbrushes were all flat on the surface.
Mm.
And so the dental community or the people that were inventing toothbrushes decided that a sawtooth or a contoured brush would help get in between the teeth better. That was like in the 90s. And what makes mine a contoured brush on steroids, if you will, is that that not every toothbrush in the world today has a flat plastic face to it where the bristles emit from. And my brush has a contoured face that mirrors the contoured bristles.
Mm,
so that every bristle on my brush, on the TLC brush.
So it's like a wave, you're saying.
It's a wave, but the plastic face is a wave and the bristles are a wave. So every bristle is 9 millimeters long. It's an even pressure across the entire surface of the brush. So not only does it get in between the teeth, but it gets in between the teeth with even pressure, and it cleans deeper where the plaque colonies originate, near the gum line. And when you destroy plaque near the gum line, it takes the plaque a lot longer to regrow at that gum line, so your teeth feel smoother and cleaner longer.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, you now have the toothbrushes that are more or less power themselves. What do you think of the that's come about in probably the last decade or so?
There's no question that there's advantages to electric toothbrushes. If you can't use your hands very well, if you're a person that is very impatient, they have little timers that help make you brush as long as you need to brush. So there are definitely advantages to electric brushes, and I don't discourage them. I think they're mm-hmm. great. Anything that can get the plaque off is something I'm behind.
So how long should you brush your teeth? You are right. Most people like to rush it because it's just, let's face it, it's a routine that we've been doing for years and years and years. So you're trying to find shortcuts. But 2 minutes per
side or something? 2 minutes seems to be the standard accepted amount of time. But if you try to brush your teeth for 2 minutes, you're going to be floating away in toothpaste.
You're exactly right. You go through a tube pretty
quick.
Stay
near a sink.
Now, do you do 2 minutes on the top, two minutes on the bottom? I'm just curious.
I keep track. I start with the upper right on the outsides, and I go all around to the other side, upper left, and then I go to the bottom outside left, to the bottom right, and then I go through the insides the same way. Start with one corner. Just keep track of where you're brushing and where you're not brushing. And with people with braces, the plaque really gathers around the braces. So I tell kids, hey, brush as much as you can with paste, then rinse out, take the toothbrush to the TV with just water and just wet, and then just brush for another 5 minutes, just watching TV or reading a book. Mm-hmm. And that way, you know, they can swallow whatever it is that they're brushing, and they can get the plaque off efficiently. So.
You know, the one thing the kids have today, and what my kids grew up with and yours too, is the fluoride treatments. And when did those come about? Because I don't recall getting fluoride treatments when I was younger.
Well, they've been in the dental office since I've been a dentist in 1982. I know it's been much before then because I remember my grandfather doing it back in the 60s.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
You
could buy Crest with fluoride,
right?
But I don't remember going in and having that whole fluoride treatment
thing. Water fluoridation is the best way to get fluoride in your teeth, and it started in the 50s, but there's a controversy to everything,
right?
And people are out there saying that fluoride is going to, you know, get you sick. And, well, I can tell you a story about a place that I worked as a satellite office in Waterford, Wisconsin, and they don't have fluoride in their water. And so I was practicing part-time in Kenosha at the time and part-time in Waterford. And the kids that would come in Waterford would have 10 times as many cavities as the kids in Kenosha. It was shocking.
No kidding.
My eyes were completely open to water fluoridation. So you can worry about a perceived problem, or you can deal with a real problem, and that's dental health and getting fluoride in your system while you're growing up. And I'm not talking about a toxic level of fluoride. I'm talking a minimal amount of fluoride. It bonds all the way throughout your teeth while you're growing. So,
now, was there a problem in Waterford why they did not have fluoride treatment?
Most small towns could not afford the water fluoridation machinery that would add fluoride to the water.
Okay, so it was simply dollars and cents.
And a lot of towns are on wells. So, you know, people have their own individual wells.
Right.
Now, you can get too much fluoride. It's called enamel fluorosis. And that's usually in areas that are over-fluoridated, like in Colorado. There's some spots that are over-fluoridated in the natural water system.
I'll be darned.
Yeah,
well,
and it turns out to be like brown spots and mottling of the enamel, which is kind of like a crumbling effect.
Geez, that's just what you don't want.
No,
yeah.
But so you don't want to get too much fluoride.
Okay.
Too much of a good thing is not good.
So what other preventative stuff would you, measures would you suggest? Well, I mean, the flossing now, that came about, last 20 years? Or I'm not sure, but I don't remember that either when I was younger. So this is why people, the AARP crowd is walking around with all this stuff in their mouth, I guess.
Right.
Stuff, mercury fillings and crowns and so on.
Well, to have optimum dental health, you want to prevent cavities, and you want to stay away from gum disease, and we'll talk about that probably in a bit. But as far as cavities go, you need to floss and get the plaque off of your teeth, because it's the bacterial plaque. The strep mutans is the specific name for the plaque. So you can have two people in a room, and one has strep mutans and one does not, and they can eat the same thing every day, and one will get cavities and one will not.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get the plaque off your teeth. That's number one. And then you have to manage the amount of time that sugar spends on your teeth. So the same two people, if they were to have different eating habits, one has three meals a day and maybe a snack, and the other one is grazing all day long, the grazer at the end of a year is going to have more cavities, because you're contacting the teeth with sugars, and as long as the sugar is on your teeth, it's combining with bacteria, forming an acid, and pulling calcium out of your teeth.
Hmm.
And the more that happens, the more chance you're going to get decay. So you want to minimize the amount of time that sugar spends on your teeth. And brushing and flossing immediately, if you could set the table with a knife, fork, spoon, and a toothbrush, that'd be fine with me.
You know, a lot of it is just the inconvenience, particularly, let's say, you're at work. You're a nurse, for example. and you're lucky if you have a 20-minute lunch. You know, where do you find the time to brush your teeth? So what can you do?
Well, you know, you want to brush in the morning and 12 hours later after dinner. Those
right.
are the two optimum times.
Bedtime.
Bedtime is good.
Yeah.
And then if you can get a brushing in between, that's fine. Otherwise, some people, if they have food lodging around their teeth, they use a little toothpick. I'm not against that. Anything to keep the food off your teeth is important. And obviously, you know, you can rinse with water if you...
No, you haven't mentioned any mouthwashes or anything, huh? I see you kind of smiling a little bit. What's the deal with mouthwashes?
You know,
it's supposed to just be the, you know, the godsend.
When they promote products, they always say 4 out of 5 dentists. Well, when it comes to mouthwash, I'm the 5th dentist. So back in the 80s,
They use the word virtually, too.
Okay. They're going to close us down. If you had a battle that you're fighting and you had a weapon and it would kill the bad guys, but it also would kill the good guys, would you use that weapon? And that's what mouthwash does. It kills all bacteria, good and bad. So that's the number one thing. And number two, in the early 80s, I was against it. And lo and behold, they came out with a finding that the alcohol that was in the mouthwashes was putting you at a bigger risk for cancer. So I think they've either eliminated or greatly reduced the amount of alcohol they put in mouthwashes. So
what do you think if it's alcohol-free mouthwash?
I think it's okay to use mouthwashes, but I wouldn't rely on mouthwashes to do your job.
Okay, but it's okay to use them, then.
I think it's fine. I don't want Procter & Gamble knocking at my door.
All right. That's something that's a concern. Okay, another thing I want to get into is teeth or toothpaste that whitens your teeth. And this has become a real big deal now, the teeth whitening business, it seems. Your opinion about that?
Well, it's number one, people want whiter teeth. Now, they're never going to be as white as paper, but people always want whiter teeth. But what people need to understand is that 95% of the population walking around, unless your teeth are chocolate brown, are not going to notice the color of your teeth, or if you have one tooth that sticks out as being darker. That's a fact that most people will not notice the color of your teeth. So I always try to make people feel, have a realistic view of their teeth. Secondly, there are two types of stains. One are surface stains, and the toothpastes will get those surface stains off, but it also takes a micro layer of enamel off over time.
These are the whitening toothpaste.
The whitening toothpaste. Okay, they're abrasive. You feel them between your fingers, and you feel like a grittiness to them. By the way, tartar control is also gritty and is too abrasive. And so it will...
So if I see a toothpaste that says tartar control, whitening, stay away from that toothpaste?
Well, guess what? That's all you're going to see on the shelves. That's all they have because people like how it makes your teeth feel. It makes your teeth feel very smooth, and they think they're ridding themselves of tartar, which they are, and making their teeth whiter, which they are. The stain is coming off. But what they don't tell you is if you use the whitening toothpaste once a week or twice a week, that would be fine. You don't have to use it every day. And also, if your gums recede, your root surfaces have a thinner coating, and if you strip that thinner coating away, I'm seeing an epidemic of people coming in with sensitive teeth, and sure enough, it's near the root surfaces, and it's invariably from the too abrasiveness of toothpaste and also brushing back and forth instead of up and down.
Okay, so I do want white teeth, let's say. What's my step? Bleaching?
Okay. There are three types of bleaching systems. One is the Crest White Strips, and I've seen great results with Crest White Strips, and I want to kick back from the Crest White Strips people because people are going to run right out and get White Strips, which they do work. They're a little cumbersome, and the strength of the bleaching solution is a little weaker, so you have to do it longer, but they do work. And what has been smart about Crest is that they've marketed it to the dentist as well. So it's a win-win. Patients want their teeth whiter. They come into the dentist. They feel better about their teeth.
Well, how so? How have they marketed it to the dentist?
They've come to our dental offices, and they've said, you know, here's the Crest White Strip Professional Kit, and it gives you more Crest White Strips, and it is a stronger solution so the patients don't have to do it longer. And, you know, you can charge, you know, what you do for over-the-counter, and they're getting a better deal for it. And, you know, it kind of promotes – It promotes it to the dentist so that the dentist promote it to the patients. And I actually might have a box or two in the office, but I don't give them out regularly. I tell patients you can get it over the counter. And so that's one way of doing it.
So the strips, that's
the
one
strips,
way.
Right.
Okay.
Another way is to take impressions and make models and make like a retainer that fits over your teeth, and you can put a stronger gel in this retainer, and it snaps onto your teeth, and you can walk around, and you don't have to worry about repositioning it and do daily chores for half an hour while it works. And you do that over time. Like the same with the Crest White strip. You do it over a two-week period. And then you're done. And if you have to redo it in 6 months, a year, 2 years, then you can just buy the replenishment kits, and that's a lot less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's I think, the most convenient way to do it, and it probably, from a cost standpoint, is probably your best bet to do the Crest White, the trays.
The trays with the gel.
The gels and trays. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're doing it over time, you know, every time you bleach, it dehydrates your teeth, and then your teeth rehydrate, and it's this rehydration process that pulls the deeper staining materials from the bottom of those nooks and crannies on the surface of your teeth. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do that just once in the chair, which is the third way of doing it, is the in-office bleaching, I believe that you don't get as much dehydration and rehydration as you would if you did it multiple times over 2 weeks.
So the bleaching is actually healthier.
Bleaching, you mean with the trays?
Well, okay, yeah, with the trays.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
With the trays, I don't think that stain and health are related.
Yeah, that probably.
So
is
I think it's
mixed,
more. I think it's terms. More effective.
It's
I think
more effective. Yeah.
In my opinion,
okay.
There's probably a lot of people out there that are screaming at the radio saying, "You idiot!"
No, not at all. Very, very educational. Now, veneers. What do you think of those as well?
Veneers are a way to cosmetically cover a stained tooth, or a tooth that has a large filling on it. There's many reasons why you would do a veneer, and it mostly is cosmetic. But if you can't bond something with a composite resin, if it's too large to bond it with the resin, then you put a veneer over top of it, and it gives it more strength.
Veneers are pretty costly, I believe, at least what I've read in People magazine.
They are.
It seems that's what all the movie stars use.
Yeah, it's probably five times as expensive as bonding, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, everyone has their own rates. But, yeah, you're going to see a lot of veneers out in Hollywood. But, you know, those are the ones that are – some of them are done really well, and those you would not know those people have veneers. But there are several people that, you know, I was watching Dancing with the Stars earlier
yeah,
this week.
Yeah, their teeth are really white.
Yeah, they are. I think Chong has the best-looking set of teeth that money can buy.
I think you're right, yeah. Well, I tell you what, we are talking to Dr. James Lehman, and a dentist from Libertyville, who has been practicing for 30 years. We're learning all kinds of things about the dentistry profession. And when we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Lehman about gum recession, mercury fillings, want to get into that, sleep breathing disorders, and some of the pressures of being a dentist. Lots more to come right here on Word of Mouth. Don't go away. That bring back memories, Dr. Lehman,
yeah,
from Jaws.
I remember the scene underwater when the head rolls out of the boat, and I just about jumped out of my seat.
I don't know why I thought of dentistry with this. Actually, that was a listener from Glen Ellen said I should play the theme from Jaws, so it's kind of fun. Before that, we heard also Make Me Smile by James Taylor. If you are just joining us, we're talking to Dr. James Lehman, a dentist from Libertyville. He's been practicing for 30 years, and we've been talking about all sorts of things. And we were, before the break, we're talking about, you know, things that you can do to improve your dental health. And, you know, I made a reference to the AARP generation, and, you know, as you get older, you know, it's kind of like, what can you do? It's a little late now for the fluoride treatment. And what we're basically doing is playing catch-up now with the many things that how we can prevent it. You were saying, too, we were just talking during the break about having a dry mouth. And many people in the AARP generation, for whatever reason, as you get older and perhaps medications or whatever, you get this dry mouth. What can you do?
Well, the technical term is senile decay.
And senile decay.
It sounds terrible, but that's what they call it.
Sorry I asked.
But it's true. The older you get, the drier your mouth gets. Biologically speaking, it happens, but also from medications that you're taking. Obviously, you've got to be on these medications, and some of them say right on the label that they'll dry your mouth out. So if you're on those types of medications, you have to be on top of your dental health, because two bad things happen with a dry mouth. One is that food will stick to your teeth longer. So if you're eating, you know, a sandwich or anything, it will stay on your teeth for twice as long before your natural saliva flow can rinse it out. So the second thing is the acids that are formed when bacteria and carbohydrates meet are stronger in strength because the saliva doesn't dilute them. So what I tell patients who have a dry mouth, if you see or if you have a piece of carbohydrate in your hand, you have to almost imagine a flame coming off of that food, and you put that in your mouth, and now your mouth is burning. And what do you do with a burning mouth? You quench it with water. So plain water, nothing flavored, because you never know what kind of secret ingredients they have. And little traces of sugar are just as bad as a lot of sugar. So you want to drink plenty of fluid with all your meals. You want to brush your teeth and floss your teeth. Unfortunately, you have to up your hygiene regimen. So you have to brush and floss after every morsel that you eat.
Jeez.
And when your gums recede as you're getting older, there's more spaces near the gum line where food will collect. And so you just have to really, really watch it, and because you can get a whole new wave of cavities happening. Now, you were talking about, it's too late for fluoride, but actually with the seniors that we have and we notice that they have decay, we say, okay, Mr. Smith, you know, what are you doing? Let's identify it. Let's see if we can change your habits and eat a different way and brush a different way. But then let's make a set of trays for you that you can put fluoride in, just like the bleaching. And only it's fluoride that you're putting on your teeth, and then that time releases it over a 30-minute period, and it gives you a boost of topical fluoride, which will help.
So that would be a one-shot deal in the dentist office with the trays.
The trays once, and then and this is for a severe case. This is somebody who every time they're coming in, they're getting two or three cavities. Mm-hmm. So to prevent that from happening, and that's what we're all about. You know, we're the only profession that's trying to put ourselves out of business, and so we'd be happy if people would stop having cavities. But
the key, if you don't do that, let's say you have the dry mouth, you have whatever medications, lots of water.
Lots of water. Keep a bottle of water close by. Keep a toothbrush close by. Keep the floss close by. You know, I tell my patients to put rolls of floss everywhere, in the glove box of the car, in the basement, in the kitchen cupboard, places that you wouldn't normally see dental floss. Get the floss close by, because the minute you get up from the table, if you don't floss, you forget about it, and that's not good. So,
wait, I got my floss right here. Give me a second. Let's also talk about something else that's really come into the news lately, and mercury fillings. Now, I have a friend who went to a dentist and had all of his mercury fillings replaced. He said, I should do the same thing, because of mercury poisoning, et cetera. And, he kind of scared me, but then he's also said it's very, very expensive as well. And, you're trying to, do this balancing act, if it's justified or not, but he did do it. And, I'm just wondering, where do you stand on, replacing mercury fillings? And I know that this has been in the news. And it's a little bit of a controversy, too, because I don't think there's definitive literature, or maybe there is.
Well, let me give you a little bit of history on mercury.
Please.
The mercury fillings were used because mercury is the only metal that is liquid at room temperature. So they felt as though they would need an amalgamation of different metals, and one being mercury. And they found that it bound pretty well, and it worked really well in the mouth for long periods of time. I was in Florida as a dentist for a year And there was a patient that came in. He was in his 80s, and I looked at him, and I said, well, when did you have that filling placed? And he looked at me, he says, 1920.
Jeez.
And so it was, at the time, over 65 years old. So the silver fillings do work well. Now, early in my career, there were dentists that were replacing silver fillings with composite, and the profession was looking down on that so much that they pulled the licenses because these dentists were trying to put fear into these people's minds that the mercury was causing all problems.
When you say composite, what do you mean exactly?
A white filling.
Okay, yeah. So, which are definitely more attractive.
They are more attractive, and it's the wave of the future. And actually now it is accepted and not looked down upon as much to replace the silver fillings with composite. But there is a caveat. You know, I swore an oath to do no harm. And what people have to realize is that if you're taking out a filling, anytime you touch a tooth with a drill, there's a liability. You know, you could get a pulp exposure. The nerve could become ill and need a root canal. You could actually weaken the tooth to the point where a crown would be needed or a cusp will break off. So, yes, it'd be nice in a perfect world to remove all silver and put composite in. I'm not proposing that at all. I think that if you have some unknown illness and you want to remove your silver fillings, that is up to you and your dentist. But as a general practice, I think we need to get to the finish line with all of our teeth, and to replace them with composite or white fillings is not the way to go. Now, I do only place white fillings now. So we've come full circle as far as, you know, placing silver fillings. We do not do that. Matter of fact, Europe has banned them.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, I don't know if Europe actually is supporting the removal of the silver fillings, but I just think that it's a pretty aggressive move, especially if you're a healthy person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for that, because I was very curious. Now, dentists are also getting into other areas as well. For example, sleep disorders, and I guess it makes sense.
It's a subspecialty mainly because dentists are looking into the mouths all the time. We're seeing what the teeth look like. We're seeing the size of the tongue and the soft palate, which is that drape that goes in the back of your throat when you swallow. We can see how long that is and the position of it. We can see how large the airway is or how small it is. And there are certain signs in your mouth that point to the a disorder, a sleep breathing disorder that causes you to not get into deep REM and stage 3 sleep. And this disorder is called UARS. It's not sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is something totally different. That's where sleep apnea is where your airway completely closes and your oxygen levels go down, and you can definitely hear a person who has sleep apnea. They're snorting and they're stopping breathing completely.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous, and a lot of people who have died in their sleep have, Reggie White has been determined to have died of sleep apnea, and many people have died because of sleep apnea. So if any of your loved ones have a high risk for heart attack and stroke, they have to make sure that they clear themselves so that they don't have sleep apnea, because it's a stressor on your body. So that's sleep apnea. Now, UARS is more of a snoring, a purring, a resistance breathing where you can kind of hear and like a noisy breathing. And it's almost like someone's shaking you or trying to arouse you gently every few minutes, and you never really get into a deep level of sleep, because every time your throat relaxes and your tongue relaxes, you close the airway off, and the rush of air makes your brain sense that, and that you want to recapture that. So you jut your jaw forward, and you move your tongue out of the way, and you toss and turn, and it arouses you to the point where if you're trying to get into the deeper levels of sleep, you can't. Now, the thing that they know, and that this is very, very recent, within the last 6 months to a year, it's really come out, and that this sleep disturbance is causing lack of sleep, lack of REM sleep and deep sleep, and the neurological rejuvenation that normally happens with deep sleep doesn't happen. And so you can get, real neurological problems with that. So if your child snores, this is for small children now. It happens all during life, but we're especially concerned about the kids because their brains are developing very rapidly between the ages of 0 through 4. and this is when most of the damage is done. And they don't really show signs other than maybe they'll snore, they'll have multiple ear infections and upper airway infections, sinus problems, or if they're a mouth breather, if they're chronically fatigued or having trouble behaving, concentrating in school, if they're a restless sleeper or they're bedwetting or have night terrors, or they have anxiety and depression and they just don't know why, that's one thing of the differential diagnosis that you have to test for UARS, what's called upper airway resistant syndrome. So don't get panicked that your kid has this, but it's something that you don't want to ignore if he does have it, because their brains are not developing properly, and they're linking this to ADD, ADHD, behavioral problems in school-age kids, and this is damage that was done early on. And if you do have it, the treatment is to go to the dentist screen for this. We don't diagnose URS. We don't diagnose anything of the airway. We just screen for it, and then we refer them to their doctor or to a sleep specialist, and then they take it from there, and they decide how they're going to fix their airway.
And so night guard, something like that would work?
Well, actually, Gordon Christensen, who is one of the preeminent dental educators, just came out and said that making a mouth guard actually closes the airway, and if you have an airway disorder, it could be making it worse. So you have to get yourself tested and make sure you don't have an airway problem first before you have a night guard made. But there are, what you're talking about maybe is mandibular advancement devices. It's like a double night guard.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yes, took out of your mouth, no pun intended.
Yeah.
So the mandibular advancement device is like a bite plate for the bottom and the top, and it has a little strut that goes in between the two, and it pushes your jaw forward in a forward position to pull your tongue forward and open your airway. So, yes, those are used as a way of keeping your airway splinted so that you can, not have this rush of air and not have this, they call them RERAs, respiratory effort-related arousals.
So those night guards are okay then?
Yes, those night guards are okay. And regular night guards are okay as well if you don't have sleep disorders, if you don't have, but I would, if before I'd have a night guard made, I would get myself tested. And there are easy ways to test.
You also test TMJ too. If somebody comes in and has that clicking of the jaw, you're able to, what can you do to remedy that?
Well, in the past, we've done a palliative series of treatments, and that would be put them on a soft diet, take analgesics on a limited basis for a short period of time, putting compresses, warm and cold compresses, on the joint. Try not to use your jaw in a eccentric fashion. So if you're talking on the phone, you don't want to use your chin to hold it. When you sleep at night on the pillow, you want to have the pressure on your forehead instead of on your chin. So those are things that you can do to help palliatively treat it. So that's one way. The bite plate was the second. But what's new, and I was at a conference last week in Atlanta, and they have associated grinding with this airway disorder and associating it with TMJ. So a lot of people who get these splints or go on CPAP, which is a constant positive airway pressure device that also splints your airway, once you fix the sleep breathing disorder, your jaw doesn't jut forward, you don't grind, and the TMJ gets better. So when you think about TMJ now, you have to think airway.
It's a domino effect, right?
Yeah.
You know, we talked briefly, just touched on in the first segment, about gum disease. And this seems to be more prevalent now than ever. And maybe particularly the gum recession and surgery. And I know that I've had it before, and I've had friends who've had it. So what can we do about that? So that we don't, I guess in a way, we can prevent it in the future.
Well, gum disease and gum recession, I would like to split up in two different
probably
topics.
Should, yeah. Yeah. It's a huge topic.
Yeah. Gum disease, we don't know what causes gum disease. I'm going to say that first, put that out there.
Mouthwash. Just kidding.
Yeah, that'll fix it.
Yeah.
Accepted theory is that bacterial plaque invades at the gum line, and there's a series of immunocompromised events that happen, and certain people and they have a very torturous explanation for it, and quite frankly, I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most dentists couldn't explain it unless you're a microbiologist or someone along those lines. I have a different take on what causes periodontal design disease, which is, in my opinion, it's based on evidence that and common sense that I've kind of gathered over the last 30 years. You have to look at the clues. There, smoking causes or has been associated with periodontal disease. Diabetes has been associated with it.
And we're talking about gum recession now.
Actually, gum disease. Well, gum recession and disease, but
okay.
We're still on disease.
Okay, all right.
So smoking can cause, and can cause recession as well.
Okay.
But, and it's, this is a complicated topic, but I'm going to try to keep it to sound bites. Atherosclerosis has been associated with gum disease just recently. We've known that a poor diet contributes to it, a bad bite contributes to it, and poor oral hygiene as well. There is a factor of the plaque and the tartar building up. So the one thing that all of these factors have in common is ischemia, which is poor circulation. When you have a mosquito bite and it turns white around the mosquito bite, that's ischemia. The blood supply is shrinking. And so if the blood supply is shrinking to the gums for whatever reason, there's building blocks that don't get there. And the natural biological rejuvenation process doesn't happen. And one of the most important is oxygen. Now, I'm going to digress a little bit and talk about the sprained tooth syndrome. What I think happens in most periodontal disease that I see in my office is that a bad bite is the trigger. And if you Google sprained tooth syndrome, it'll kind of tell you, it'll step-by-step tell you about how a tooth moves back and forth when it's in a traumatic bite situation. And so this back and forth movement causes a series of cell changes in the gum area, and these are called mesenchymal cells. And don't get caught up with the terms, but the mesenchymal cells can either go to be osteoclasts or they can be osteoblasts. And when you move a tooth in a certain direction, the pressure side builds osteoclastic cells and they eat away at bone. And on the back side or the tension side, the osteoblasts build bone. Now, that's how orthodontists use the cells of the mouth to move teeth. And so the teeth can move using the system. What happens when you don't have enough oxygen is that it mimics a pressure reaction. In other words, when you put pressure on a periodontal ligament, the oxygen goes away, and then the osteoclasts start forming. When you don't have oxygen, whether you're smoking or diabetes or whatever the reason, the oxygen levels go down, and then the osteoclasts arrive. And that's what I think causes that. And that's just my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
So that's why my gums hurt. I got that completely.
Well, one more thing.
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay. I ran this theory to Gordon Christensen, who is that preeminent dental educator out in Salt Lake City. Very well known. And I told him about this theory, and he said it's very plausible. As a matter of fact, he said that they're using hyperbaric oxygen treatments to regrow bone. So he thinks that the opposite could very well be true, that the lack of oxygen is actually the trigger or the key. So.
Okay. Now, the gum recession, actually I want to talk about gum recession surgery. What are the benefits of gum recession surgery?
It's a complete cure. It's a complete cure for the attachment. That's what you want. When you do gum recession surgery, you're re-putting attachment onto the teeth. And for the most part, you're going to get a complete cure. You're not going to get the level as it was when you're 20, but you're going to reproduce the level that you have, and you're going to draw a line in the sand, and it's not going to go any further. And very few times, unless you have an illness or unless you have a progressive periodontal disease, most times, like 95% of the time, this recession surgery is a complete cure. So when you do it, you're doing it because the attachment has broken free and bacteria is getting deep underneath the gum tissue into the soft tissue. And so you want to put a barrier there, and that barrier is a graft. Now, people have to understand, it's like having the worst pizza burn in your life when you take the skin off of the roof of your mouth and place it onto the site. But it's worth it. It's something that I recommend when patients do lose their attachment, because you don't want to lose your tooth. It's just that important.
Okay, you know what? We haven't really talked about the maybe the behind the scenes of being a dentist, and you know, it looks pretty stressful for me. I think dentists make it look kind of easy because you know they come in and they're kind of on stage, but you know, it's a pretty fine work, pretty precise to say the least, and not pretty, but it is very precise. So what are some of the stresses of being a dentist? Seems like a lot of juggling, too.
Well, first,
just give us a little bit behind the curtain. I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Dentists are very detail-oriented. Most of them are perfectionists. You're working in small areas.
Yes.
You're looking through loops, which are magnifications, and your hand-motor coordination has to be at its best. That's why I don't drink coffee, because it makes you shake.
Yeah, what happens, though, if you come in and you just – have you ever felt like maybe this
an
is
off
just
–
yes. Can a dentist have an off day?
No, a dentist cannot have an off day. That's why when I don't feel well, I call in sick, and I call it a day.
Mm.
I have Wednesdays off, so I go Monday, Tuesday, and then Thursday, Friday, and some Saturdays. But, yeah, if you work in dentistry 5 days a week, you'll burn out.
Mm, I would think so.
Yeah. And so – it's very stressful from a standpoint of operating on an area that's very sensitive. People are, you know, in pain when you start, hopefully out of pain when you finish. And you have to almost have a thick skin to absorb all of that pain. It's kind of like a psychiatrist who deals with people who are depressed and anxious, and he has to be a shock absorber to their problems. He can't take them to heart. He's got to almost leave it at the door. So I compartmentalize. When I leave the office, my wife asks me how the day went, and I have to actually think about it, and I'll just say, yeah, it was fine.
Mm-hmm,
you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and most of the time it is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
have you ever had any tense situations where you thought, boy, I'm really up to my elbows here in alligators. This is what do we got going here?
I have managed over the years to avoid those situations. When I was early on in my career, I used to take out wisdom teeth, and I was building my practice and up in Kenosha. And there were patients that you know couldn't afford to go to the oral surgeon, and they would beg me to take their wisdom teeth out. So I would, and we were trained to do that. But with a wisdom tooth, and you can tell right ahead and that it's going to be a difficult one, but a wisdom tooth is very unpredictable. You can take 10 minutes to get it out, or you can take an hour and 10 minutes to get it out. And so if you're trying to keep your schedule, that's probably the most stressful thing is to get behind on any procedure. But wisdom teeth are the most unpredictable. So I send those to the oral surgeon.
Now, dentists seem to follow a very strict schedule. I mean, if I go to a doctor, you know, I can wait in an office for a very long time. I never have to sit, well, you know, I don't know about never, but rarely. Do I have to wait? You know, I've had a number of dentists over the years. It's pretty efficient. And why is that, or how is that?
Well, if you leave a patient in a stressful situation, sit in an office, and we try to make our office nice. We've got an aquarium and a kiddie play area and some nice music sometimes. And WRLR. On the
You're good. You're good.
And so if you leave a patient sit in the waiting area for more than 20 minutes, they'll let you know. They'll say, you know, they'll look at their watch, or they'll give you a look, or you'll say, I'm sorry, I'm running late, and they'll...
But it rarely happens. It really is a fine-tuned machine. I'd say most dentists
but
run that
that's
way.
That's why yeah. we're causing enough stress to begin with. We try to run on time. We have multiple operatories that we can overflow in and get a patient numb if we need to. So you try to develop the system so you can stay on time, and then there's almost like a red light button that goes on when we start running behind, and people you know jump into action. We'll either call a patient and tell them we're running a few minutes late, or we'll you know have the hygiene checks a certain way, or we'll get a patient in another room and numb them up first, or you know.
What is the most challenging, difficult part of the job of being a dentist?
The most difficult part, I think, is making people happy when you're going into you're invading their mouth. You're invading their space. You know, if you can do anything you want to a newborn baby, but you touch their mouth and they'll rear back. It's a protective response. It's one that it's all about cranial nerves. When you have a nervous system that goes to your brain, and now you've got a cranial nerve that's a direct connect, it's your mouth is very sensitive. So going into people's mouths and working and trying to make them happy, and if you're just a little bit off with a filling and they can feel it, they're going to come back, and that's the last thing you want to do. Is you don't want to make a patient have to come back for an adjustment. So yeah, that's the hardest job, is to get everything perfect every time.
Boy, oh boy, I tell you. So what's the most gratifying part? Is that it, or what's the most satisfying part?
The most satisfying part is the thanks that I get when you do a good job. About 2 weeks ago, I got a letter from a mom, a card, a thank you card. I diagnosed UARS in a small child and sent them to their pediatrician, who sent them to an ear, nose, and throat, and they found that he had enlarged tonsils and adenoids. And the kid was having some real problems sleeping and behaving. And so he had the tonsils and adenoids out in early August, and the mother said, "He is sleeping beautifully. Thank you so much for helping our precious so-and-so." And that, to me, is where it's at. I mean, I've been doing everything and having successes, but when you get thanks from patients, that's the real joy.
Well, I tell you what, Dr. Lehman, I'm going to double that. I'm going to say thank you for being here. This has just been terrific. I can't thank you enough.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I always love talking about dentistry. So, you know, if you see me on the street, you can ask me a question if you want.
Well, I tell you what, thanks again. Again, we have been talking to Dr. Lehman of Libertyville, and if you want to learn more about, for example, sprained tooth syndrome or Dr. Lehman's patented toothbrush, just visit his website at www.jameslehmandds.com. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday at 11 a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.